Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is David Freeman, a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He has had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under President Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under President Carter, and also headed New York Power and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was the California State Energy Czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. Now a senior advisor to Friends of the Earth, he is the author of All Electric America, A Climate Solution and the Hopeful Future, and he has a new autobiography, The Green Cowboy. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Freeman.
Well, thank you for having me.
And today, in declaring an end to the war on coal, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, signed a measure to repeal President Obama's signature Clean Power Plan. And that, of course, is being seen as a great setback following President Trump's pulling out of the Paris Accords. How significant do you see this move on the part of Scott Pruitt? And, of course, the war on coal has been largely an invention of the Trump campaign itself.
Now, there's been no war on coal, and Mr. Pruitt is a present and clear danger to the environment rather than a protector. So we all know all that. But I think the more important lesson and issue here is that the Democratic Party and the good people of America need to take the offense here. I mean, yes, we have a president and an administration and a Congress that, in Harry Truman's word, can give them the best possible ratings. You can call them a do-nothing Congress. But focusing on what they're not doing and what Scott Pruitt is doing is missing the point. The point is that we don't have an offense. There is no environmental movement in this country anymore. There was in the 70s, in the 80s, and even into the 90s. But bellyaching about Trump is not going to save the environment. We've got to do something. And there are activists at the state and local level that are trying to do something. But we're not doing enough, and we're not talking in plain English. I mean, the program that Scott Pruitt has dismantled, the so-called Clean Power Program, was attempting to deal with just one-third of the greenhouse gases, and they were dealing with it in a very mild manner, to put it mildly. In other words, they were suggesting reductions in carbon emissions that were already taking place in the marketplace because natural gas is cheaper than coal, and the so-called war on coal was just something that was happening in the marketplace. But don't get too excited. It wasn't really helping prevent climate change, because natural gas, while the carbon content is only half of coal, it is methane, and it leaks. And that methane is 80 times as bad as carbon for at least 20 years, and then it lingers on. So that if the leakage is 1 or 2%, which it is, natural gas is as bad as coal. So Obama was largely ignoring two-thirds of the problem, the emissions from automobiles and heating homes and factories. And in the one-third, the electric power industry, he was simply mimicking what was happening in the marketplace. And his Clean Power Program, frankly, if it were implemented, wouldn't be making a whole hell of a lot of difference. Now, at least in California, we realize that what it takes is mandates. I mean, let me put it this way. It doesn't take a lot of brain power to figure out that if this stuff is poison, and it's poisoning the environment in a way that it's creating a greenhouse that's so strong that it's causing the oceans to rise and the hurricanes to be worse, that we ought to stop burning fossil fuels. We ought to at least stop building new power plants that use fossil fuels. So why didn't Obama propose even a one-sentence bill that said all new power plants shall be zero emission. And don't get me wrong, the initiatives in energy efficiency have been somewhat helpful. But to say it, and I as a staff person helped enact the CAFE standards, they moved the cars from 12 miles per gallon to 20-something. But we have so many more cars now, and we drive them so many more miles, that we burn about as much gasoline last year as we ever have. So basically, we have not even proposed laws at a national level that would make a difference. And so I kind of view the good guys as that believe in climate as intelligent deniers, whereas the Trumpers are just don't believe the science. But Mother Nature doesn't see any difference. We're all polluting in a very, very vigorous way. And but there is hope. The technology has advanced so rapidly that solar and wind is now cheaper. And what we need to do is just pass laws that require that everything new be zero emission. And the big, big, big new news is the Chinese government is considering doing just that. And hopefully California and many other states will follow. So this fight is not over, but we need to be playing offense and not sitting around just bellyaching about what Trump's not doing.
And again, I'm speaking with David Freeman, a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He's had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under President Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under President Carter and also headed New York Power and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was the state energy czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. Now a senior advisor to Friends of the Earth, he's the author of All Electric America, A Climate Solution and the Hopeful Future, and he has a new autobiography, The Green Cowboy. Now, I was actually watching on CBS News last night a piece they did on China and how China is building just acres and acres of solar farms, some of them are floating on lakes. Extraordinary statistics of how much solar power they install every day. And, of course, they've mandated a move to electric cars. Still, of course, the electricity itself is coming from coal plants, which they are phasing out. And they seem to be setting an example here. So why don't we have a sort of Sputnik moment? Remember when the Soviets put up Sputnik? There was a tremendous backlash, and it spurred NASA into action, and JFK made the promise of putting a man on the moon and bringing him back to Earth, and the rest is history. What's it going to take in the U.S. for us to have a Sputnik moment on the dangers of global warming and the need for clean power?
I think that we need a young female version of Ralph Nader to somehow appear. I think the makings are there for a giant step forward. And California has shown some signs of getting there. You know, this fight's not over. You know, I have 9 grandchildren, and I'm just looking for somebody to give them something worth fighting for. I mean, the clean power program, frankly, would not make enough difference to where it would save us. I mean, you know, when we had a problem with DDT, we called it poison, and we outlawed it. Now, you can't get up and make a speech saying that climate is the most awesome challenge this world has ever faced and really believe it, and then suggest pablum or patty cake. I mean, we just need to start getting our leaders, at least on the Democratic side, to propose laws that will make a difference. Now, in California, that's beginning to happen. We now have got renewable energy laws requiring that at least half of the electricity be a zero emission. and a bill to make it 100% almost passed. Hopefully it will pass next year. But that's just dealing with the making of electricity. The big thing that we're not doing is in using that electricity to replace oil and gas. When is anybody going to have the courage to get up and say that in order to save the planet, we've got to put the oil and gas people out of business over the next 30 years? 1 year at a time, about we have to reduce about 4% a year. It can be done if we decided to do it and then enacted laws. And the beautiful thing is that the technology is there to make it happen. The electric cars are now a commercial product, and if they were mass-produced, their costs would come down, and they would be the cheapest car on the road because they don't have any maintenance costs to speak of, and the electricity is equivalent of about 50 to 75 cents a gallon gasoline, and it has no moving parts but the wheels, so there's not a lot of maintenance. We've got technology that's actually better, but we have an oil and gas and nuclear lobby that's trying to hold on to the past, and it requires laws to change that. We wouldn't have seatbelts in cars if we hadn't passed a law to require them. I mean, here the life of the planet is at stake, and it would seem to me that we would pass the laws, and I think that we have a lot of cities now and states that are saying they want to go to 100% renewable. But then they've got to be sure that they are coming up with programs to make it happen and that we give the automobile industry, they're saying they can make electric cars. Well, tell them that as of 2025, all their cars have to be electric. That's what China is going to do, and we got to do the same. And the same with new houses. And we can provide tax incentives to enable people to retrofit their homes to get off of burning fossil fuels. We need to use the word poison when we talk about fossil fuels, all of them. And natural gas, which is methane, is as bad as coal, and we need to start lumping them together and not feel like we're doing something really wonderful. If we substitute natural gas for coal, where Mother Nature doesn't know the difference.
Well, when you say we should be calling oil and gas poison, that brings up the obvious case of cigarettes, which eventually we decided were poison and a health hazard, and we taxed them, and we've taxed them heavily and continue to tax them, and the revenues are used to treat people who have suffered as a result.
Yeah, but there's a fundamental difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you smoke, you die.
Right.
Now, I realize that a non-smoker was affected by smoke from a smoker, but by and large, the damage was to you. On the climate issue, we are all roommates, my friend.
Right.
And if you drive an electric car and I drive a gas guzzler, we're both going to cook. So if there was anything that required a mandate for everybody to do it, it's the climate issue. So it's not good enough to just tax people, because the rich will pay the tax and keep on polluting. I mean, to tell people that they have to pay to pollute might help a little bit if the problem weren't as dire as the climatologists tell us. But we need to outlaw this stuff because it is poison.
But if you outlaw gasoline and don't have a substitute, I mean, isn't that...
But we do. But we do.
We do, but it's not there. I mean, they keep promising stuff and it never arrives. So how do you get your local gas station out of business?
Well, in the 70s, when we had a Republican president and we had an EPA headed by Mr. Ruckelshaus, the electric power industry said, we don't know how to make a scrubber to scrub the dirt out when you burn coal. It's a local pollution problem. He ordered them to do it because he knew that the technology was available. We have a rule under EPA that you have to use the best available technology, and the cost comes down with mass production. And the EPA in the 70s ordered the utilities to build scrubbers, and they built the scrubbers, and we don't have the smog that we had then. We still have the carbon going up, but we've kind of improved the local pollution. So, frankly, the electric cars are a commercial reality. And with mass production, their costs will come down. They're inherently a lower-cost car. And the heat pumps are a commercial item. We could have an all-electric America with all electricity made from solar in 30 years if we started doing it and started going there. I'm not advocating that we turn the lights out or that this be done overnight. I'm saying that if we don't start now, the climatologists tell us that we've got to get this done over the next 30 years. Well, every year that we delay it, it becomes harder and harder to do, and more gas is piled up. I'm trying to eject a sense of urgency into instead of just kicking the can down the road. I mean, let's be very honest about it. It doesn't take a lot of political courage for the President of the United States to go to Paris and sign a non-binding treaty that says that we're going to try real hard by 2040 or 2050 to come clean and come back home and actually do nothing in 2017 and 18 that really moves us in that direction, except a little bit on the electric side. So what I'm saying is we don't have a lot to brag about. We ought to just assume that Trump is doing nothing, the federal government is doing nothing, and focus on putting together something to fight for so that this becomes a critical issue in the national election in 2020. And in the meantime, we get as many states and cities to go in that direction. But that's what we ought to be doing rather than bellyaching about Trump.
Well, David Freeman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Dave. Bye-bye, Dave. And again, I've been speaking with David Freeman, who's a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He's had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under President Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under President Carter and also headed New York Power and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was the state energy czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. Now a senior advisor to Friends of the Earth, he is the author of All Electric America, A Climate Solution and the Hopeful Future, and he has a new autobiography, The Green Cowboy. We're going to take a brief station break and be back examining the withdrawal of Kenya's opposition leader, Raila Odinga, from the rerun of the disputed August election overturned by Kenya's Supreme Court.